You about the position of the Israeli military, which are becoming, as you've pointed out, more and more public in their opposition to the war. What is the significance of that, and could that make a difference?
Wow, it's a big issue. So what's going on here is the military knows they have no political plan. They're being sent on a mission that is unachievable. They've actually openly said you cannot defeat Hamas in the way Netanyahu talks about this de-radicalization agenda in Gaza. It's for the birds. So I think what the military are saying is we need a different approach. The problem here, in addition to, of course, what the military has been conducting in Gaza, is that these are the same guys in the military who were in charge on October 7th. And there is a fight. There is a blame game between the military leadership and Netanyahu.
We have 20 seconds, Daniel.
Was it political failure or was it military failure? You have blame games when there is a failure. That's what it is. And Netanyahu may replace some of this military, and that could be even more dangerous, by the way.
Daniel Levy, we want to thank you for being with us, president of the U.S. Middle East Project, former Israeli peace negotiator under Israeli Prime Ministers Ehud Barak and Yitzhak Rabin. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Will be broadcasting live from the Milwaukee Republican Convention and the Chicago Democratic Convention, expanding to 2 hours every day. And we have a development director position opening to lead our fundraising efforts. You can check it out at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are tuned into listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. This month's Engineering Committee meeting will be held on July 11th at 7 p.m. The meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland City Commissioner Rene Gonzalez says the city should keep people from criticizing the police at city council meetings. Multnomah County's rapid rehousing program exceeds its goals, and Oregon Representative Earl Blumenauer joins calls on President Biden to step out of the presidential race. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, July 11th, 2024. I'm Althea Billings. Portland City Commissioner and mayoral candidate Rene Gonzalez says the city shouldn't allow public comments that criticize the police during city council meetings. This comes from the city council meeting yesterday amidst a discussion about yet another settlement lawsuit for violence committed by Portland police against the public in the 2020 racial justice protests. The council was set to vote on an $11,500 settlement for bodily injury for Kelsey Ulmer related to an incident on July 30th, 2020. Ulmer was repeatedly shot in the back and buttocks by Officer Brent Taylor. She was then forcibly pulled to the ground and arrested, though no charges were filed against her. Before the commissioners voted, they heard testimony from Mark Porras from Portland Cop Watch. Portland Cop Watch is a volunteer-based group that started in 1992. They document Portland police actions and conduct, and their goals are to foster accountability and create a police bureau free of, quote, corruption, brutality, and racism, end quote. Here is what Porras told the city councilors on Wednesday.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Mark Porras. I use he, him pronouns, and I'm with the group Portland Cop Watch. We understand the parties have come to an agreement, and we have no objection to the city paying $11,500 to settle this bodily injury lawsuit due to the harmful actions of PPB Rapid Response Team Officer Brent Taylor and other Portland police officers. It's been over 4 months since we last testified on a police brutality settlement stemming from the 2020 protests. The total for 2020 protest settlements alone is now more than $2.565 million. The total dollar amount and average settlement cost may seem low compared to other cities, but the number of lawsuits is high and it continues to rise. According to court records, on the evening of June 30, 2020, Kelsey Ulmer was at a protest near the PPA office on North Lombard Street. Shortly after Ulmer arrived, a line of officers in riot gear charged the crowd. When police charged, Ulmer turned to run with the crowd to avoid being attacked by the officers. After Ulmer took a few steps, police shot them three times from behind with impact munitions. Court records say that Ulmer was yanked off their feet and landed on their tailbone, causing immense pain. An unknown officer then dragged them backwards by their collar, and two officers knelt on them while they were being handcuffed, and Ulmer limped to the police car. Ulmer was arrested, but no criminal complaint was filed. Court records say Officer Taylor testified that he fired his impact munition weapon 40 to 60 times within just a few hours that day, and videos depict him frequently firing multiple rapid shots into the crowd. 4 days prior to this incident, Judge Hernandez signed a temporary restraining order restricting the exact unnecessary use of force that PPD's Brent Taylor used on Kelsey Ulmer. His actions on June 30 violated the order. We're encouraged that Officer Taylor does not appear to be on the newly reformed rapid response team. However, from the explanation we heard at the press conference announcing the new RRT, it is possible that Taylor could be called upon to assist at future protests. Judging from his track record, that should be as disturbing to you as it is to us. Independent Monitor LLC called for a transparent introduction of the new RRT. Instead, PPB conducted a hastily assembled news conference without notifying community members, including, we believe, the Portland Committee on Community Engaged Policing. This is important because at a June 3rd PSEP meeting, Chief Day said he was not sure how the introduction would happen. At the following week's PSEP meeting on June 10, with PPB members and a mayor's aide in attendance, nobody mentioned the press conference that would occur the next day. At a recent Citizen Review Committee meeting, Chief Day questioned whether it even makes sense to discipline officers for actions that occurred 4 years ago. That attitude is disturbing for many reasons, not the least of which is that these dangerous cops should have been disciplined and in some cases fired long ago. It is also why it is so important for the new police oversight system to be entirely free of influence from police and their bargaining units, including in the nomination of board members. As always, we appear before you with the hope that you'll discuss the policy decisions that lead to these incidents of police brutality, and we look forward to learning how we can be sure that the new rapid response team will be different from the old one when it is staffed by many of the same members that caused so much harm in 2020. Thank you.
That was Mark Porras from Portland Cop Watch addressing City Council about a resolution to settle a suit against the city for police shooting at a protester in 2020. The City Council eventually voted yes, but not before Gonzalez said this.
Mayor, I just want to say I strongly object to continuing to platform abolitionists that cannot testify on the matter before council. We have done this for a year and a half while I've sat on council. They have no constitutional right to testify on matters not before us at this point. They're welcome to sign up for public testimony at the beginning of council. And we have repeatedly platformed this nonsense. So I strongly object going forward. That's it.
Thank you.
That was Portland City Commissioner Renee Gonzalez's outburst at the city council meeting on Wednesday. The other city commissioners didn't seem to react to Gonzalez's comments. Juan Chavez with the Oregon Justice Resource Center is the attorney for the plaintiff in this case. He told the Portland Mercury that he was bewildered by Gonzalez's comments and that what Gonzalez suggested is illegal. And since the commissioner has a legal background, he should know that. Chavez said, quote, "Content discrimination is what we call it in the law. It is shocking that someone who is barred with the Oregon State Bar would suggest that. It's not becoming of a public official to believe he could come up with that kind of censorship, let alone a barred attorney," end quote. The City Council passed the settlement resolution awarding Kelsey Ulmer $11,500 for bodily injury committed by Portland police in the 2020 protests. The Joint Office of Homeless Services announced last week that they have exceeded their rapid rehousing benchmark. Its Housing Multnomah Now initiative has successfully housed 306 people since it was launched in February of 2023. Housing Multnomah Now focused on unhoused populations in Northwest Portland, Old Town, Gateway, and Thousand Acres. Their rapid rehousing program provides short-term rental assistance and services that are meant to accelerate the housing process and ensure that the move off the street is permanent. Unlike other housing services, rapid rehousing is provided without preconditions like employment, income, a clean criminal record, and sobriety. The Joint Office initially set a goal of getting 300 people indoors in fewer than 6 months. But their efforts lagged initially as they struggled to find contractors to work with and were met with challenges like completing leases for unhoused folks without ID cards. When the program managed to place just 38 people in apartments over that six-month time frame, Multnomah County Chair Jessica Vega Peterson reassessed. The program's second year has managed to be far more fruitful, culminating in Vega Peterson announcing last week that they had exceeded expectations. This news comes shortly after the City of Portland and Multnomah County have agreed to move forward with creating a new three-year contract for the Joint Office of Homeless Services. The decision ended more than a year of contractual disputes. Much like Portland, Seattle summers are no longer reliably mild. Many locals don't have AC, so heat waves can be deadly. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Seattle residents are accustomed to wearing rain jackets and sweatshirts year-round.
Living in the Seattle region and Western Washington, there's a tendency to think that heat is a problem everywhere else, but here we typically have very mild summers.
But Laura Whiteley-Binder, the Climate Preparedness Program Manager for King County, says very hot days are getting more common as the climate warms. And unlike in Phoenix or Miami, where heat is the norm, many people in Seattle lack air conditioning, so they have a hard time escaping the heat. A devastating heat wave in 2021 killed more than 30 people in King County, which includes Seattle. It drove home the danger of extreme heat and the need to prepare. So the county is developing an extreme heat strategy. She says it will identify ways to protect people from high temperatures, for example, by planting trees to create shade or helping people access programs that subsidize the cost of air conditioning. Binder says it will also be important to adapt building standards and energy codes, for example, to require energy-efficient windows that can keep out the heat.
We need to be working on that now so that we can try to get ahead of the problem rather than constantly chasing the problem.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Oregon Congressman Earl Blumenauer calls for President Joe Biden to drop out of the 2024 presidential race. Blumenauer said in a statement on Tuesday he believes President Biden should step aside to protect democracy and focus the rest of his term on solidifying his legislative legacy rather than focusing on re-election. The statement from Biden echoes growing public sentiments that President Biden is unfit for office and will not be able to beat Donald Trump in November. The debate between President Biden and Trump on June 27th raised concerns about Biden's age and mental acuity, both from the public and from Democratic Party leadership. There are additional concerns that President Biden's refusal to withdraw from the race will jeopardize Democrats' chance of flipping the House. President Biden maintains that he's the best candidate to take on Donald Trump in November. Blumenauer represents Oregon's 3rd district, and he's the 9th House Democrat to publicly ask President Biden to step aside. Democratic Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York introduced articles of impeachment against Supreme Court Justices Samuel Alito and Clarence Thomas. They're related to their failure to disclose monetary ties and gifts they received while serving on the court. Alito and Thomas have both been criticized for accepting gifts and travel from GOP donors without reporting them on financial disclosure forms that are required of Supreme Court justices. Ocasio-Cortez says this failure to disclose is a breach of the Supreme Court's code of ethics. Alito and Thomas both deny that their actions are a breach of ethics and claim their failures to disclose were accidental. The introduction of these articles follows harsh criticism of the Supreme Court by Democrats. Ocasio-Cortez was joined in introducing these articles of impeachment by other representatives, including Barbara Lee of California, Rashida Tlaib of Michigan, Bonnie Watson Coleman of New Jersey, Delia Ramirez of Illinois, Maxwell Frost of Florida, Ilhan Omar from Minnesota, Jamal Bowman of New York, and Jasmine Crockett of Texas. Hollywood's Democratic allies enter a Biden withdrawal debate. AOC moves to impeach Justices Thomas and Alito, and GOP commissioners face backlash after they refuse to certify Nevada county recount results. With more on these stories, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Well, I think it's a valid point. I mean, I'm deeply, deeply concerned.
Actor Michael Douglas responding to fellow actor George Clooney's op-ed calling for President Joe Biden to leave the race. Just last month, Clooney, actor Julia Roberts, and former President Barack Obama hosted a $30 million fundraiser for Biden. But in the New York Times, Clooney wrote that the dam has broken. While the White House is trying to turn the page on the president's debate performance, donors say uncertainty around his capacities are growing, with many fearing the down-ballot impact. When asked if Biden should stay in the race, Democratic heavyweight and former Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi stopped short of giving a yes or no answer.
It's up to the president to decide if he is going to run. We're all encouraging him to make that decision.
Meanwhile, Michael Bennett of Colorado has become the first Democratic senator to publicly say he lacks confidence in Biden's ability to win.
Donald Trump is on track, I think, to win this election and maybe win it by a landslide and take with him the Senate and the House.
Bennett voiced concerns over polls that show Trump with a lead over Biden less than 4 months before Election Day. House Republicans will likely vote for a bill this week to require people to show proof of citizenship to register to vote, despite a lack of evidence of non-citizen voting. Wisconsin Republican Brian Steele denies charges that the SAVE Act is intended at voter suppression, saying it would strengthen election integrity.
Some will say that illegal voting is already illegal for non-citizens, but it's also illegal to evade the Border Patrol and enter our country illegally. But that hasn't stopped almost anyone.
Progressive New York Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has moved to impeach Supreme Court Justices Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito, pointing to their refusal to recuse themselves even when found to have ties to right-wing megadonors and extremist movements. She calls the apparent bias a threat to the American rule of law.
And that court itself was appointed by the most corrupt president in American history, Donald Trump.
In a letter asking for investigation by a special prosecutor, two Democratic senators accused Thomas of taking a previously undisclosed yacht trip to Russia, paid for by a Republican billionaire. Officials in Nevada's second largest county have refused to accept a primary election recount that confirmed the initial results. Voting rights advocates say the three Republican commissioners in Washoe County are spreading misinformation and undermining fair elections. Commissioner Clara Andriola voted against certification.
There's a lot of information that has been shared that, in my opinion, warrants further investigation. It's not a reflection of anything intentional. I am not an election denier.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for the Global Citizen International Digest with Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. At 6, it's Rose City Native Radio. Then stick around at 7 for American Indian Airwaves. Tonight's weather will be clear with an overnight low of 58 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be bright and sunny with a high of 87. Today in history, in 1977, Martin Luther King Jr. is posthumously awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom. The quote of the day is from American writer E.B. White, who said, quote, "Democracy is the recurrent suspicion that more than half of the people are right more than half of the time. It's the feeling of privacy in the voting booths, the feeling of communion in the libraries, the feeling of vitality everywhere." Alaska and U.S. agencies are facing a lawsuit over removing human remains from Aniak Airport. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A tribal government from Alaska's Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta is suing state and federal agencies for taking human remains from an airport site and refusing to return them. KYUK's Sage Smiley reports.
About 200 miles up the Kuskokwim River in western Alaska, the village of Aniak hugs the riverbank and encircles the community airstrip in a wide loop. And that airstrip is at the heart of a civil case recently filed in Anchorage federal court. Aniak's tribal government, the Aniak Traditional Council, is suing state and federal agencies for taking human remains from an airport site and not returning them, and subsequently not allowing the tribe to further excavate the site. The Aniak Traditional Council says that's a violation of federal law because it's barred the tribe from practicing its cultural and religious traditions and has endangered other ancestral remains of Aniak's tribe that could still be buried at the community's airport. The tribe wants the excavated remains to be returned and to be allowed to continue exploring the site to recover and preserve other remains or cultural artifacts. According to court filings from July 2nd, the suit stems from a project to relocate Aniak's airport runway to comply with federal aviation standards. In 2020, a contractor digging trenches for the project found human remains. Almost a year later, the Aniak Traditional Council brought in an archaeologist to examine the site. The suit says they discovered that the airport project cut a trench through a previously intact prehistoric burial site. The recovered remains and related artifacts were sent to the University of Alaska for examination. Since then, Aniak's Traditional Council says the University of Alaska has kept the remains and that the Federal Aviation Administration has refused to assist in repatriation, in violation of the Federal Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, also known as NAGPRA. The Traditional Council also claims that the FAA and State Department of Transportation have barred the tribe from further excavation. Aniak's tribal government is concerned that airport maintenance could further disturb the site and the ancestors buried there. The suit names five defendants: the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities and its Commissioner Ryan Anderson, the University of Alaska System, the Federal Aviation Administration, and FAA Administrator Michael Whitaker. All have declined to comment on the case. For National Native News in Bethel, Alaska, I'm Sage Smiley.
Members of Arizona's congressional delegation introduced legislation this week to secure water rights for three tribes. The bill, if ratified, would also establish a reservation in northern Arizona and southern Utah for the San Juan Southern Paiute Tribe. KNAU's Melissa Sivigny reports it's the only federally recognized tribe in Arizona that does not have its own homeland.
The measure is part of the Northeastern Arizona Indian Water Rights Settlement Act, which has already been approved by the Navajo, Hopi, and San Juan Southern Paiute tribes. It sets aside 5,400 acres for the new reservation and water to supply it. Robin Preston Jr. is the tribal president for the San Juan Southern Paiute.
I think it's going to mean the world to us, especially in this day and age where, you know, everybody wants to have an identity, which we have, but also a place to call home.
Preston says his people have waited decades for this day, and the reservation will allow the tribe to offer houses, jobs, and health care to its members. The two parcels that make up the proposed reservation are west of Tuba City in Arizona and near Navajo Mountain in Utah. For National Native News, I'm Melissa Sivigny.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The Oregon Criminal Justice Commission released its 2023 Bias Crimes Report last week. The report shows a 229% increase in reports to Oregon's Bias Response Hotline from 2020 to 2023. Oregon's Bias Response Hotline launched in January 2020 as a way to report bias and hate incidents without involving the police. The hotline offers confidential support and is able to connect callers with community services other than law enforcement. The Oregon Department of Justice says the hotline has seen an increase in reports of bias every year since it's been launched. The increase in reports to the hotline might be explained by an increase in public awareness about the program. Oregon residents can reach the Bias Response Hotline online or by calling the number 1-844-924-BIAS, B-I-A-S. Federal officials will fine a bank $20 million for illegal car insurance practices. Suzanne Potter has more on the story, including consumer advocate recommendations to help people avoid financial abuse.
Fifth Third Bank just agreed to pay a $20 million fine to settle charges it forced car buyers to purchase unnecessary insurance and created fake accounts in customers' names. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau said the bank required customers with car loans to buy insurance, even if they already had coverage or got their own within 30 days. Rosemary Shahan with Consumers for Auto Reliability and Safety says some customers then couldn't afford the payments.
There were about 1,000 consumers who had their cars repossessed. Most people rely on their car to get to and from work and get their kids to school and get to medical appointments, so that is really devastating when they lose their car.
In a statement, Fifth Third Bank said it shut down the protection insurance program in 2019 and is taking action to set things right. The money from the fine will go to a fund to reimburse 35,000 customers who were harmed. The court order also bans the company from setting employee sales goals that incentivize fraudulently opening accounts. Shahan says car dealers sometimes make verbal promises that differ from the contract or fail to even print out the financing paperwork. She wants people to know that they cannot be required to buy insurance if they already have coverage.
The best way to avoid all these scams is join a credit union, get your own financing, and deal with a reputable bank, and don't let the dealer get financing for you.
In 2015, Fifth Third Bank was ordered to pay more than $21 million in fines for discriminatory auto loan pricing and for illegal credit card practices. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
In a new budget, California allocated $12 million for reparations initiatives across the state. Details of how this money is going to be spent haven't been finalized. The state is considering creating an agency to manage reparations programs. That could mean identifying families whose land was unjustly seized or issuing a formal apology for California's involvement in perpetuating discrimination. The state is not considering direct payments to Black residents at this time. The allocation of these funds marks the furthest any state has gotten in the reparations process, and it's a starting point for reparations in the state. Congestion pricing in New York City has been a subject of much debate, but the holdup on the project has consequences. In the wake of Governor Kathy Hochul's pausing of congestion pricing, the MTA is curtailing several capital projects. This can mean slower service for commuters and lacking accessibility for riders with disabilities. Edwin J. Vieira has more on the story.
New York is seeing ripple effects from Governor Kathy Hochul pausing congestion pricing. The MTA halted numerous capital projects like Americans with Disabilities Act upgrades at subway stations and track replacements. This is costing the state 100,000 jobs that congestion pricing's $15 billion in revenue would have paid for. Rachel Foss with Reinvent Albany says Hochul's decision has impacts beyond New York State.
Every single congressional district in New York and New Jersey and Connecticut have companies that do business with the MTA. So those are jobs that the MTA creates. The vast majority of them are from its capital program.
Talks are ongoing to get congestion pricing back up and running. It could have a lower toll, but it won't stop the backlash the program faces. Other states, municipalities, and organizations filed lawsuits related to the program. The outer boroughs and the state of New Jersey would all have seen increased pollution due to congestion pricing, but MTA was planning to use program revenues for mitigation work. Some feel Hochul's decision was a short-sighted political move. The governor cited the toll for drivers entering Manhattan below 60th Street as a major reason for pausing the program. Foss says this means future MTA projects could result in delays at best and cuts at worst.
They are going to have to cut state of good repair projects. And those are the things that keep the system working. If they can't fund state of good repair projects, that means more delays, worse service, because the system is more likely to break.
Along with lost jobs, this will cost workers more than $3 billion in lost wages. Several groups, including legal advocates and the New York City Comptroller, are exploring pathways to enact the program. Some feel not putting the program in action violates state law and the 2021 Green Amendment. This is Edwin J. Vieira for New York News Connection.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, July 11th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Grace Benson, Mel Gertov, David Rosenberg, and Reed Johnson. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Alex Gonzalez, Suzanne Potter, Edwin J. Vieira, Antonia Gonzalez, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for the Global Citizen International Digest with Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov.
Welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest with Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. It's critical commentary on foreign affairs from a human interest perspective. The opinions expressed in the following segment are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov. I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the week. Here are today's top stories. Britain's elections, an historic Tory defeat. The French elections, something happened. And in Israel, a ruling on conscription and a potential explosion in the West Bank. First, British elections. Keir Starmer will be the next British Prime Minister. In a landslide win for Labour that was long predicted, Starmer will take over after 14 years and five prime ministers under Conservative Party rule. During that time, public services have shrunk, the cost of living has skyrocketed, and poverty has increased dramatically. And then there's Brexit, Britain's decision to leave the European Union, a major miscalculation with regard to expectations of reduced immigration. So who is Starmer? A British journalist, Oliver Eagleton, who has written a book about Starmer, offers an unsparing critique. Contrary to the usual depiction